Welcome, everyone, to today's ILTA 20-minute podcast interview titled Legal Operations in eDiscovery. I am your moderator, Anne Halkett, Director, Solved eDiscovery Services, a division of Alexander Holborn. I am thrilled to be joined by our two distinguished speakers, Joy Hawley, Legal Operations Consultant, Veritex Advisors, and Richard Robinson, Director of Legal Operations and Litigation Support, Toyota North America. Welcome, Joy and Richard. Could you each take a few seconds to tell us about yourselves?
Sure. Thank you, Anne, and thank you for having us this morning. My name's Joy Hawley. I am a lawyer by training, been practicing about 28 years. Spent most of my career in big law at Bryan Cave Leighton Paisner as a practicing attorney and then running their e-discovery group and practice support group for about 15 years. From there, I spent 2 years establishing a legal operations function at a premier Fortune 300 financial services firm. And for the past 8 months or so, I've been on the consulting side working with Veritex Advisors, advising law firms and legal departments on legal operations issues.
Thanks, Joy. Richard?
Hi, yes, I'm Rich Robinson. I'm the Director of Legal Operations and Litigation Support for Toyota Motor North America. I am a technologist by training, and I spent the first half of my career in law firms and doing e-discovery and tech for law firms before I made a brief move to what I call the dark side, where I worked with an e-discovery service provider for 1 year before I made the move to over to corporate. And I've been in corporate for the last 10 years. I should start by saying that the opinions that I express today are my opinions, not the opinions of Toyota Motor North America, but I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you both. So let's jump in. How would you describe the significance of e-discovery services as a component of legal operations for a law firm or corporation? Joy, let's start with you.
Yeah, thank you. And that's a great question, Anne. So e-discovery is such a significant component of legal spend for all kinds of complex matters. So be it litigation, investigations, data breach, security cases, antitrust matters. They are a significant aspect of how the substantive engagement is shaped and resolved. And by that, I mean, you gather information about the claims and defenses, what the case is about from electronic discovery. Most law firms have a philosophy or strategy on how they handle e-discovery in-house issues, how much they outsource to a managed service provider, and it's sort of along a spectrum, and they handle some portion of that themselves and outsource some portion of it. Sometimes these decisions are driven by the client, right, who might have relationships, or for example, if they're serial litigants, they might have a managed service arrangement with a vendor and either require or desire their counsel to do things a certain way. And of course, law firms are glad to honor those preferences. And oftentimes providers are often holding the client's data for other matters and may be able to be reused. There are economies of scale or other issues, reasons why you would use a particular vendor. You also have technical aspects that are typically handled by legal technologists. They aren't lawyers, but they have special skills. For example, data handling, data processing, database administration, et cetera. So other aspects such as the review, the need to train systems, the use of analytics are typically performed by lawyers. They're more likely to be performed in-house or certainly under the supervision of one of the lawyers handling the underlying matter. So if the firm ultimately outsources components of the process, usually the law firm is responsible ultimately for the defensibility and the integrity of the electronic discovery process, which is something that's important to keep in mind. The technology competency, of course, is addressed in comment 8 to the model rules of professional conduct 1.1, and the lawyers handling the case are ultimately the ones who need to attest that the discovery is complete. So there has to be a good level of knowledge and background there.
Thanks, Joy. Rich, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, it's hard to follow that up, right? I think Joy pretty much said everything there is to be said. I think that You know, I do own eDiscovery as part of my role. And whether or not eDiscovery is a component of legal operations in your corporation, I think is a matter of culture, as well as a matter of the size and volume of litigation at the organization. Much of the work that we do in eDiscovery is repeatable and defensible, right? So you know, we strive to operationalize it. So it's a natural part of the legal ops role within a legal department. But whether or not you can actually make it a part of the department really depends on the organization that you're working in.
That makes sense. So jumping to our next question, what are some of the costs associated with developing talent to manage eDiscovery within the firm, and how are those costs justified? Joy, let's start again with you.
Yeah, again, a great question on the return on investment, what firms are interested in terms of what's required for training to get their people ready to perform these services. So there's a range of costs, obviously. Those can include software certification. Some of the prevalent platforms like Relativity, Reveal, and others will offer advanced certifications that demonstrate that the holder knows how to perform complex analytics and case management, which are recognized in the broader industry and are marketable skills, are things that clients will be looking for in terms of the qualifications of the technologists to perform these various roles and activities. There are also more agnostic type of eDiscovery certifications from organizations like ACEDS or the EDRM. And those test more the knowledge of the process versus a knowledge of a particular type of software or database. For lawyers who specialize in eDiscovery, there's certainly specialized training organizations that provide that, just as there are for any type of professional area of specialty or expertise. So I would say as a client, I would expect to pay more for the services of an eDiscovery professional who holds one or more of these certifications. So the justification in incurring those costs would be that the services can be performed more efficiently, more effectively, and therefore more profitably.
That makes sense. Rich, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, again, it really depends on the organization, the culture of the organization, and the volume that you're bringing in-house. When you're talking about what it costs to develop talent internally, it depends on how much of the EDRM you intend to bring in-house, right? So do you want to have a... you know, a full like forensic investigations team as part of your eDiscovery talent pool? Are you going to have eDiscovery analysts? Are you going to have processing? Are you going to have just project management in-house? So, you know, the costs associated with developing that talent pool vary from company to company. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to a cost-benefit analysis, right? When you're asking how do you justify this spend, it's taking a look at the entire workflow, determining how much you would have spent if you were to outsource all of this, and figuring out whether it's worth it to bring in-house. Again, bringing in-house doesn't just mean the cost of licensing, and it doesn't just mean the cost of the salaries of the individuals that you bring on, right? It means so much more than that, because it's about development. It's about staying on top of the latest technology. If you are choosing to insource this entire workflow, there's a lot more to it than just the people and the technology. So you really have to take that into account when you're developing your cost-benefit analysis.
So I'd imagine tracking of metrics would be very helpful.
Absolutely. To determine. All about data.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. One of the great things about a lot of these platforms is it gives you the ability to track those metrics quite granularly. So you're able to track things like productivity and throughput at a level that will allow you to assign cost to that and to do various profitability analysis rather easily.
That makes sense. So moving on to our next question, what additional considerations should be weighed when determining how much of the e-discovery process to insource? So Joy, let's start with you again.
Yeah, so another great question. So, first and foremost is probably the firm's strategic plan. What are the firm's long-term strategic growth? I mean, if you're a firm that's focused on becoming one of the premier M&A firms or type of practice that's not conducive to the leveraging of e-discovery technology, it may not be that practical to make that kind of investment. Although I will say that the use of this type of technology is constantly expanding, and a lot of the artificial intelligence use cases that we're seeing now grew out of technology that was really developed in the e-discovery context. So it's not just for litigation anymore, as they might say. The other thing is, what types of clients do you have? Do you have clients that are serial litigants that are going to see some value in the fact that you have this type of ability versus clients that have only an occasional need for a large scale complex review and maybe have more of a preference to outsource the occasional matter? Another consideration is, frankly, from a firm culture point of view, do you have the type of clients that are willing to pay for these services? Some types of clients, and particularly clients and lawyers who take a more traditional view, still have difficulty collecting on these types of costs that they inappropriately, frankly, relate to more administrative or cost of doing business types of expenses. And you want to make sure, obviously, that you have the ability to recoup the significant investment that you would need to have these abilities in-house. If you are going to outsource the abilities or some of these functions, you obviously want an agreement with the provider that's clear that the client is going to pay, or the firm is only going to pay once it receives funds from the client, so the firm doesn't have the burden of that obligation. So those are some of the considerations.
That makes sense. Rich, your thoughts?
Yeah, I there are two things that I'd like to add to that. One, on the law firm side, there's the potential to be a profit center, right? So again, it's this cost-benefit analysis. So most of the firms that I talked to and went from my time at the law firms, we weren't really thinking about it in terms of being a profit center. It was about being a value add to our client, being able to provide better services. But at the end of the day, if you do it right, it can be a win-win, right? The law firm can realize profits from insourcing if they have the right team, the right technology, and the right processes, while providing better services to their client and additional functionality. On the corporate side, I think one additional thing that you can think about when you're considering whether or not you should insource this is, what additional functionality can they provide, not just to the legal department, but to the organization as a whole? The legal department at an organization, at a corporation, should be more than just risk management and litigation support, right? An e-discovery service could provide additional resources along the M&A space, DSARs, right? Responses to privacy issues or cyber breaches, right? So the technology and the workflows and the people are situated best to perform some of these activities that expand beyond just the simple litigation support functionality that they're originally intended for. There's some synergies with other business units in the organization. And that's what we should be all about, or we should be about the enablement of the business, right? So this technology could potentially give you additional resources in that respect. And I think that's something that should be taken into account when you're considering whether to bring these in-house.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So our last question, Once you start a team, how can you grow the team and what additional areas could the group serve? And Rich, you've already started to answer some of that. So would you like to expand upon it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. You know, obviously, if you have the funding and you're showing the return on investment and the cost benefit analysis to your department and to the organizational leadership, you may be able to get funding for additional resources, right? New FTEs, new technology, or consulting services that help you build your department. And that's wonderful. But the fact of the matter is that most organizations are feeling the crunch of the recession or supply chain issues or et cetera that are asking us as a cost center to try to reduce overhead. And so gaining additional FTEs is not really realistic. So something that I have done throughout my career is build my department through relationships with other business units, right? Like I mentioned before, there's a lot of synergy between cyber and privacy and legal. So, you know, I have always made it a point to try to build those bridges and potentially increase the size of my team through those dotted line relationships to the other organizations, right? I have added resources to my discovery team by working with IT to identify resources within their organizational structure that can support me on things like M365 data collections or forensic collections if they have those resources, right? So you can build your team without actually getting additional budget or funding by building those relationships. And the last thing that I'll say is you can do it through your strategic partnerships. So if you're even if you're insourcing, you probably have some strategic partnerships with vendors in the space, and those relationships can be leveraged to increase the size of your team. You know, I talk about it all the time that I ask my strategic partners, my vendors, to innovate with me, help me find ways to build my team, to build my processes, to add additional technology by working with me to build them together and creating those win-wins with my strategic partners.
That makes sense. Joy, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I echo what Rich says about the significance of those collaborations with stakeholders across an organization. That, of course, would apply in a law firm as well when you have IT organizations, risk management, perhaps the Office of the General Counsel within the law firm, other areas that can help you, as well as the potential ability to tap under-leveraged or, resources in other departments that aren't necessarily fully engaged at a particular time, either because of a lull or, you know, any number of workload distribution issues. So, I have felt the pain that Rich is describing in terms of lack of ability to add FTE. So I think there it bears noting that many law firms have the existing talent in-house already to start a team like this or to expand a team like this. You have individuals who are tech savvy, who embrace new technology and change, who want to add skill sets to their repertoire to advance at the firm, and who are quite willing to take these things on. I mean, historically, litigation support departments were begun and developed with tech savvy paralegals, with legal assistants who wanted to know more and who had long been creative with technology. So I think a firm should first look inward in terms of existing resources. And it also gives you the ability or the luxury to sort of ramp up slowly in order to build a team. Once you do that, the protocols, the playbooks, the procedures that you build for e-discovery can be expanded and applied to many other types of work streams and engagements for clients. For example, contract analysis, due diligence, antitrust, government investigations, data breach cases, those types of things. So you can deploy these types of teams that become quite versatile in a number of different settings to help you in all kinds of areas of the firm and to expand across marketing opportunities. And again, to add that value, as Rich says, to demonstrate to your clients that you're flexible, that you're nimble, and that you have these type of deep internal resources to help them with any type of legal challenge or business problem that they may have.
That makes complete sense. Thank you very much, Joy and Richard, for your time and expertise shared today. For those tuning in, we hope you enjoyed our session and have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Thanks. Joy.